This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Missed out on any part of our first hour, absolutely fantastic. Had a lot of great guests. Cole Kublik was with us. A great conversation about the SEC, Will Hill, Adam Rosenberg. A lot of baseball covered in that first hour. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Money Moves. And, of course, VSiN Best Bets podcast feed as well. Like, rate, review, subscribe. Would very much appreciate it. You can find those wherever. And on the VSiN Watch app, a shout-out to Mitch, not Mitchell Moss, but one of our audience members who I met over at Jackpots earlier today said the app is where he usually goes to. Likes it a ton. So you can check out the VSiN Watch app as well, but make sure you download, like, rate, review, and subscribe, and pot to the futures as well. We got a new episode coming out on Monday, I would assume. Tuesday. Mitch will be back, I think. So we'll have a new episode next week. I promise you that. Even if I have to do it by myself, which I've done more often than not, I'm just going to say, more times than Mitch Moss has. Put it that way. All right, a little bit of news, by the way. We didn't hit this yesterday because it happened after the show, but how about this? The lifestyles of the rich and famous. Cornerback Terrion Arnold, released by the Detroit Lions earlier this summer, charged with multiple felonies, has a new job, and it's not breaking rocks. It is with the Seattle Seahawks. So Seahawks have become a little bit stronger in that secondary, potentially. Arnold actually wasn't really that great, so we'll see if this really works out for him. But the defending champs look like they are at least going to try to see if they can recoup something when it comes to Arnold and keep their spot at the top of the NFC. But there are a lot of challengers in the NFC, and one of them we will talk about today as part of our training camp tour. Let's do it.
Join Stormy and JBT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
Chicago. I learned yesterday that spot where they're potentially building the new stadium in Indiana is like right up the street from where Chicago is. The more you know about the Midwest geography. So they'll continue to be the Chicago Bears, despite the fact that it seems very, very likely they will play their games in Indiana in the near future. Doesn't matter. We're talking about this year. Coming off of an 11-6 season this season. Win total, 9.5, shaded to the under at minus 125. Division win total, 2.5, shaded to the over at minus 200 for the Chicago Bears. Most wins in the NFL, getting 22-1. Fewest wins, you're getting 100-1. Slightly favored to miss the playoffs at minus 115. Plus 305 at the NFC North, plus 1250 over at the NFC. And the Super Bowl odds, 24-1. Your most likely MVP candidate, quarterback Caleb Williams, of course. And your coach of the year odds, Ben Johnson at 12-1. Hard to really buy into Ben Johnson at 12-1. Because generally coaches have to exceed expectations. It's actually one of the more annoying awards just because that guy likely is one of the better coaches in the NFL and does a really good job, but is probably not going to sniff the award considering what we have seen from this team last year and the expectations he has set for himself. But let's talk about some of the changes. We're going to talk about Caleb Williams. Don't worry, we have to. Key additions, though, Kobe Bryant, who we'll get into details about a little bit later, Devin Bush, Neville Gilmore coming in from Indianapolis along the defensive tackle group. Key losses, DJ Moore in the trade with the Buffalo Bills. So, how do you break down the Chicago Bears? I think there's two ways to attack this, but let's start with the sexy position, which is quarterback Caleb Williams. Question that I put here is, how can Caleb Williams improve? Williams as an individual, 12th in pass expected points added, 15th in EPA per dropback. So one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, but if you look at it in terms of expected points added per dropback, relatively average. This is where you get with Williams, and you look at some of the differences in his numbers, and you can see what the problem is with Caleb Williams. And he had a strong year. Anybody in Chicago, before you start to get mad, I'm a big Williams guy. I don't want to say always have been, because the dude's always been uber talented, so it's not like you were on an island, but there were a lot who questioned his potential as a starting quarterback. By the way, we'll remember who you are. A lot of you did, for stupid reasons, but he seems to be a starting quality quarterback in the National Football League. The question is, can he be one of the elites? He's got to fix a lot of things. Caleb Williams was, and these are some good numbers. Mediacom's put these things out there. I thought they were pretty solid. Tied for third amongst quarterbacks in explosive plays being, of course, those of 15 or more yards. Third in QBR under pressure, but he was 20th in dropbacks in which he was kept clean. Sixth in QBR against the blitz, but he was 32nd in off-target rate on short throws, those being 0 to 9 yards. So the very simple way to put it for Caleb Williams was, I mean, and we can think about it, right? Just think about a Caleb Williams moment from the National Football League season in 2025, and you think of big explosive plays, shots downfield, high leverage moments. But the stuff in between, the little stuff, success rate, just keeping the chains going, those are times in which they had pretty much struggled. Now, he was somewhat dangerous with some of those throws downfield. He had a turnover worthy play rate of over 6% on throws of 10 or more yards downfield. But on those short throws, a turnover worthy play rate of 1.7%. He wasn't very accurate, but he also didn't put the ball in danger when he was throwing those short yardage plays. And then you look at it, too. The completion percentage as a whole just needs to get better. 57.3% completion percentage for the season, 69% adjusted. Those are numbers that have to get better for Caleb Williams. Again, the easy stuff has to get better. And one would assume that maybe you can. Like, if you're good at the extremes, then maybe the stuff that comes beforehand will eventually come a little bit better, especially when you're talking about working under Johnson and working with what should be a really dominant ground game once again. Now, will it be able to be as dominant as it was a season ago is a real question. Fourth in expected points added per rush a season ago. Third in adjusted line yards per carry. Second in power success rate. Tied for fourth in the percentage of runs that were stuffed behind the line of scrimmage. Very good there. And led the league in second level yards per carry. DeAndre Swift, Kyle Manungai last year combining for 1,870 yards and 14 touchdowns. Given Ben Johnson's history as a play caller and how he likes to run these offenses, you can generally assume that this offense is probably going to, again, be one of the stronger rush offenses in the National Football League. So if Williams can really take that step forward in getting the easy stuff down while maintaining his ability to generate the explosive plays, you could see a scenario in which the Chicago Bears team is going to be really freaking good and one of the best offenses in the NFL. Again, all on the shoulders of Williams and whether or not he fine-tunes those small portions of his game. I think what we talk about with Chicago, because you hear it a lot when it comes to the Bears and the analysis for the 2026 season, is regression candidate. I've used those terms. What does it mean? Why are they a regression candidate? The first thing you look at here is the defense. They led the league in takeaways. They had 33. Interceptions, they had 23. Generally, takeaways are a trend that will correct itself to an extent. Like, you're not always going to, or you're not going to be able to consistently lead a league in takeaways year to year. Takeaways and turnovers tend to be somewhat random. So you're probably not going to be able to do that again. Why that matters is if you're not getting those turnovers and getting them when you got them as a team, then all of a sudden your defense becomes exposed because you look under the hood for Chicago. 21st last season defensively in opponent expected points added per play, 26th in success rate, 25th in opponent completion percentage, and 28th in passing touchdowns allowed as a whole. They gave up 32. So if you're going to continue to perform at this subpar level on defense while also not getting the same turnovers that you were, then all of a sudden you look at this and you go, well, there's probably a pretty big step back here coming for Chicago. And then what if Caleb Williams doesn't take those steps forward? What if Caleb Williams doesn't improve? Because we have to assume that that is a possibility here. Then you're looking at everything making sense in terms of this team being one of those regression candidates that we're talking about. Throw in the fact that, by the way, they have the seventh hardest schedule in the National Football League by opponent win total. You throw it all in the pot, and what comes out is a Bears team that likely should take a step back if those issues persist, and it looks like potentially they will. The bad news, obviously, in terms of the injuries, Kobe Bryant out 4 to 6 months. He has the surgical procedure on the knee, so that's going to be a problem. One of the reasons this team was supposed to maybe improve on defense was Bryant's presence. And the pass rush is a real question. The other day, Montez Sweat went down with an injury. It doesn't sound particularly serious week to week, maybe, when it comes to his performance here. But if you look at this team from a pass rushing perspective, this is where you get a little bit worried. They were 22nd in pressure rate just last season. Look at the individual pass rushers as a whole. We bring up Sweat for a reason. He was their leader in total pressures a year ago at just 65. Right behind him was Gervon Dexter Sr. at 43 along the interior. Then it kind of drops off from there. Where is his pass rush coming from? This season has to be better. And so if you're not getting the turnovers, if your pass rush is going to be mundane, and if Caleb Williams doesn't improve, it does make sense with a harder schedule why you would expect that this team is a candidate to go under their win total and take a step back from where they were a season ago. It opens up with a relatively easy one, and I would call it easy, winnable, we'll call it, 1-2 punch. You're on the road against the Carolina Panthers. You play host to the Minnesota Vikings. From there, obviously, you get a step up in competition with the Eagles on Monday Night Football. You get the Packers. I mean, I would even throw out, especially if you're a team that has the red flags, we'll call them, that you do have defensively, and as somebody who believes the Jets can be a little bit better, you know, week four against the Jets doesn't look like a circle win. Week six against the Falcons on the road doesn't look like a circle win. And then from there, it gets extremely difficult for the Chicago Bears. So how we play this, as much as I like Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson, I still think under 9.5 at minus 120 is a very fair play here for the Chicago Bears. 9 wins can still get you, obviously, a winning season, and it can still get you into the postseason on the back end, depending on how the rest of the league shakes out. But I do think that from a pricing standpoint, to me, it just makes more sense that Chicago is going to be a team that wins those 9 games. And as I always like to point out, when you look at these schedules, because we're projecting based on win totals for these teams, and that bakes in an idea of some sort of improvement or adjustment from the prior season. It's a way better way to look at strength of schedule than obviously the previous season's record. But having said that, when you look at the opponents like a Saints team, for example, or we'll bring up the Vikings who you play twice, if those teams are going to hit the upside of what many people think they can, then all of a sudden those games become much more difficult for the Chicago Bears. So I think this is a team that is definitely worth playing under 9.5 at minus 120. And it might be one of the win totals that I have coming up a little bit later this month, because VSiN's on the clock for the second annual Pro Football Futures Draft. 13 VSiN hosts and guests face off in a fantasy football-style snake draft hosted by Dustin Swedelson. Look at this. The summer of Swede continues. Every pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown you can use. Win totals, division winners, player props, and stat leaders. Last year's competitors are all back for round two. That includes me, by the way. I'll be there. Joined by three newcomers stepping into the Futures Draft room for the first time. The other day, Stormy and I were sitting here, and we were like, why is Keyshawn Johnson hanging out in the green room and staring inside of our studio? Well, he's going to be part of this. Comedian, sports commentator Nick Buckeye, and the guru, John Hansen. I don't know why I did that. The pronunciation totally threw me off. I know who Nick Buckeye is. Don't just watch the Futures Draft. Profit from it. Tune in Thursday, August 20th, 5 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN, the sports betting network. So looking forward to that. Bears maybe will be part of it, unless they're taken here. I believe Patrick Maher won last year, if I remember correctly. So good for Patrick defending his title. Patrick also one of the only hosts that failed to listen to the rules and tried to pick things multiple times, even though they were already taken off the board. So hopefully Patrick improves in that regard. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have plenty left to get to in the last 45 minutes of our show here on Money Moves. We'll hit a little bit of baseball, but on the other side, Von Dalzell will join us from NBC Sports as we look ahead to week zero and week one in college football.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we got about 15 minutes. I'm getting too excited for the weekend. We got about 45 minutes left. We got a lot to get to in these 45 minutes. So let's not waste any more time. We head out to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in our next guest. Von Dalzell is with us. You can follow him up on Twitter at VMoneySports. Very nice to give us a couple of minutes here. We got a lot to get to. Something's moving, though, in your lap. What do we got going on here? What's happening?
Oh, yeah, we got a little pup for the day, man. So, you know, we got to take care of all the dogs. Nice little side hustle for me. But, you know, our first play of the day for week zero is an underdog pick. So I felt like it was only right to have the pup today.
Yeah, let's talk about this because this NC State team, super intriguing. Our colleague here, Dustin Swedelson, likes this Wolfpack team a ton, especially in the big picture. CJ Bailey had a lot of good things to say during AACC media days, including the desire to win a championship in that conference. And I think they can, and they got Virginia to start. So what are we doing with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a good spot for NC State to stay competitive. You said CJ Bailey being a leader, you know, he started off the year really good in his first four games last year, over 300 plus passing yards in two of them. He ended the season pretty well. His last three games of the year, Florida State, North Carolina, and Memphis, over 600 total yards, seven touchdowns, no picks. And the fact that this game also was supposed to be in Brazil, got rescheduled back to Virginia, that moved the line in Virginia's favor about 2 points. And if we're all being honest here, you know, that's probably an overreaction since the Cavaliers don't really have that big of a home field advantage. So I know it's the first game of the season, but it's also a lot of unknowns here. And when you look at this Virginia team, they were so great last year, but they don't have Jamari Taylor anymore at running back. He was a tank. They have a new quarterback. They had lost his job last year and a number one receiver. So I'm riding with the dog. They've been well, won three straight times in Charlottesville. I think they can make it four, so I'll take the points here.
I like it. A play that shares a lot of different spots here at the network. A lot of people like this Wolfpack team here at VSiN, big picture and in this first matchup. Let's stay at the conference, though. Doesn't seem like there's going to be many wins on the schedule for Florida State, and it seems like there is an impending coaching change coming up. So maybe when you can get them, you're going to take them, and you're going to take them in a big way. They're a big favorite, about 31.5. Are they just going to lay down the wood here against their opponent in week one?
Yeah, I would imagine they have to, you know, trying to shake off what happened of last year. You don't want to start the season with a dud, you know, even if it means, you know, winning by 3-4 touchdowns isn't necessarily a dud for Florida State. But this is a game where I think they can go out here and dominate. You look at New Mexico State, they've gone 0-7 against the spread in their last seven season openers. So I was basically already in on Florida State. But if you look at New Mexico State, they're relying on a lot of FCS talents as transfers. Florida State doesn't need that. They got a guy like Wisner from Texas at running back. They went out and got a bunch of receivers and tight ends. Already deep room. You look at the offensive line, 107 combined starts. I like this team a lot on paper, and Ashton Daniels is a real threat too. So this is a good spot for Florida State to just pummel a New Mexico State team that really has a lot of change from last year, and it's not as much change as Florida State when you talk about talent. So, yeah, I like the Seminoles.
All right, before we move on to week one, because I know you got to play, were there any other lines that stuck out to you week zero? Was there a line maybe you were waiting for to pop that if it gets there, you would play it?
You know, one line I was looking at, and a team that I took the over on their win total was the North Carolina Tar Heels. And I know it probably sounds super dumb, but I do think this UNC team will be improved this year. And this is a game where they probably could compete here. I mean, Bill Belichick, last year, they had so much expectations around that program. And the center of attention really wasn't even the team itself. It was Bill Belichick and his relationship with his girlfriend. So this year, I'm expecting a lot of different things from UNC, a much improved play. Guys who want to be there are going to be there. And I think that they're going to be a much better against the spread team because everybody was looking at this team on how to fade them early. And then they started picking up some spread covers later in the season. And I think that can continue here as people will kind of be out on them. So they may be a good bet early in the season. Certainly 7.5 is tempting, but it looks like it could move to 8.5 or 9.5. If we get that anything close to 10, I'd be willing to take UNC.
I don't think you're crazy at all. Actually, that's going to be one of the things that I'm looking at, waiting to see where it's going to go. I think I'm going to get 7.5 whenever I want it, but I'm with you. They were actually really good defensively last year. We know Belichick can actually get that part done, and we're covering numbers down the stretch, so I don't think you're insane at all. All right, let's go to week one. A tie to our neck of the woods. A former Mountain West offensive player of the year and UNLV quarterback Anthony Calandria has a new home. He is over at Nebraska. They're 24-point favorites in week one. What are we going to do with the Cornhuskers?
Yeah, I actually like that move a lot for them. You know, Dylan Raiola, obviously not a mobile quarterback whatsoever. So now the Cornhuskers will have another layer to their offense, another threat. And I think that helps them out a lot here. And from everything I'm reading or hearing about Nebraska and Matt Rule, this is the best team that he's had so far. And I think if that's the case, they should pummel this Ohio team who is basically starting over. I mean, you look at the Bobcats, they have an all-new starting five on the offensive line. They have a brand new quarterback as well. That's going to be hard to mesh early in the season against a Big Ten team like this. And Nebraska's also switching its base defense. It's now running a 4-2-5. So that gives Ohio a little less film to work off of since they're going with the San Diego State defense from last year with the coordinator switch. So it's a lot of changes. You know, unless Nebraska has those meltdowns early defensively in the first quarter or first half, it's really hard for me to see them not cover this game, especially when they're 4-0 against the spread versus the MAC in their last four tries. And they pummeled their non-conference competition when you look at Akron and Houston Christian. I mean, they won by 68 and 52. So four touchdowns, three scores, whatever you need. I think it's definitely possible here for Nebraska. This line should close somewhere past 25. And in the first three games, they get Ohio, Bowling Green, and North Dakota. Sounds like a pretty good recipe to be betting against the spread on Nebraska. So I like them in week one, two, and three more than likely.
All right, you mentioned some win total plays you have, and Bondell Zellbelly, by the way, is with us at V-Money Sports up on X, NBC Sports, The Spot. Any other win totals that you've got in pocket that you'd be willing to share with our audience?
Yeah, I'm really high on Utah this season and BYU. Those are two teams that I think are pretty good hedges to try and catch Texas Tech this year when it comes to making the college football playoff, going over their win totals. When you look at the schedule, particularly for Utah and BYU, the home slates are perfect. They're just beautiful for those two teams to get double-digit wins. It's really the road schedules that may be a little tough. Of course, BYU goes to Notre Dame, and that's going to be a huge game. It's going to be a clash. Notre Dame goes to BYU. It's going to be a clash this year. So I'm really excited about those two teams. You know, they get a lot of changes with the transfer portal, but they still get their key guys back, the quarterbacks, the running backs. And you look at the coaching change for Utah, I actually think it's going to work out in their favor for a guy like Devin Dampierre, who had a great season. It's just when he ran into Texas Tech, he had nothing. So, you know, who can knock off Texas Tech is going to be the question this year. I think the Red Raiders will make the college football playoff. But I think Utah or BYU, one of those two teams sneak in the college football playoff, and they're both good bets to go over their win total this season, as the Big 12 is a little more separated from the top to bottom this year than it was last season.
Yeah, when the total for in terms of playoff teams in the Big 12 is set at 1.5, but I'd be with you in playing that over. I was actually making this case the other day to one of my colleagues doing local radio. If you look at BYU's schedule, if you lose to Notre Dame and then you lose to Texas Tech in a Big 12 championship game, your two-loss team with one of your losses coming in a conference championship game, it should be a good enough resume to make it in. I think of the two, BYU is the one I'm pretty high on.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, they have L.J. Martin, too, Barrett Bachmeier. Like, their offense is going to be, I think, much improved this year, and they're going to have another year of these guys together, which is a big deal here. But you look at their schedule, there's really nothing to dislike. I mean, going to Utah is their toughest game outside that home game against Notre Dame. You know, Arizona, Colorado State, TCU, Iowa State, all these teams have a lot of turnover from last year, even coaching changes for a team like Iowa State. So you just go down the schedule, and finding more than two losses for BYU almost seems impossible. And I'll probably get burned because this is one team against the spread that I should never be betting. I might be like 2-19 all time. But BYU, to me, is a team that offensively is going to take a step forward, and defensively, they're going to be the second or third best team in the conference. So why not play the over? Why not get a piece of the conference championship or college football playoff? Because more than likely, Texas Tech will face BYU or Utah. And if you got a piece of those two teams, you'll have a hedge on Texas Tech if that's the way you want to play it.
Yep, Von Dalzell again, NBC Sports at V Money Sports. Von, we appreciate a couple minutes, man. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate you putting up with the dog, too, whining. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all. We've had way worse, trust me, including on my end, too, by the way. It all happens. We do have a bit of breaking news, though, before we get out of here. We do want to hit on this. We did mention it yesterday. Saints rookie wide receiver, as Jordan Tyson, I should say, left practice the other day. Looked like it was going to be somewhat serious, and it seems like that is the case. Not insanely crazy, we'll see, but Jordan Tyson does have a right hamstring issue, according to head coach Kellen Moore. So he's going to be sidelined for the foreseeable future, Moore says. Not going to estimate a timetable for Tyson's return yet, but when asked about the regular season, said it, quote, could potentially linger into week one. Why this matters, it's for many different reasons. So the New Orleans Saints, of course, a very big darling pick, a dark horse pick, if you will, win the NFC South. Tyler Shuck was impressive last year, a team that many think could make the playoffs and win a division. But Tyson also one of the shorter shots, or at least was right before the injury, to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, and potentially could have been a value play, because Fernando Mendoza was a little mispriced at the top of that market. So worth noting again, if you're just joining, a Saints rookie wide receiver, Jordan Tyson, right hamstring issue, going to miss time, and that injury could linger into week one for the New Orleans Saints. The quote from Moore, quote, we've just got to let these experts evaluate this, and then we'll put together a plan. Not going to jump to conclusions. I don't have a doctor in front of my name, so I'm not going to jump to put together a timeline on it for Tyson. Should also note another massive deal happening in the NBA. I know we all want to talk about it. I guess we'll have to kick this down the road, though. The Cleveland Cavaliers have traded Dennis Schroeder for cash to the Charlotte Hornets, Trey Mann. So that's very impactful. It does matter. It does matter. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Bruce Marshall, he's going to join us. He was at SEC Media Days. He is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to college football. We'll continue the CFB theme on the other side.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season's here, folks. Want to get your best foot forward. Sharp money already moving around. Sharp plays is the spot to go. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. You got to follow the sharp money and get ready for the football season. Head over to sharpplays.com today. A little bit of breaking news in the National Football League. James Pierce Jr., edge rusher for the Atlanta Falcons. Questions abound about what his fate was going to be. We do have closure here. Falcons defensive end James Pierce Jr. suspended 8 regular season games for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. Pierce arrested in February in Florida, as those who don't remember, after a domestic dispute involving his ex-girlfriend. So we have at least a number of games for James Pierce Jr. The breath was to say that I had the stats in front of me, but I forgot what they were. 45 total pressures and the team leader in sacks, James Pierce Jr., was now done for 8 games. We'll get into the details of this and what it means for Atlanta coming up in about 15 minutes from now. But let's head out to the Progressive Guest Line and welcome in Bruce Marshall, who is nice enough to give us some time here today. Bruce, good to talk to you, sir. I haven't spoken with you for a while. Hope you've been well. And I wanted to start, I know you were out at SEC Media Days. We were talking with Cole Kublik earlier today about his Auburn Tigers. And I'm going to be selfish and ask you the same question. Do you share my positivity when it comes to Auburn and the SEC this year?
I do, JVT, nice to be with you again. I do, and I'll tell you why. Auburn was not that far away last year, and that was sort of the hallmark of the Hugh Freeze regime, which they pulled the plug on early last November. But of their seven losses, six of them last year were in one score game, and the seventh loss, that 20-10 loss to Georgia, very misleading. The referees blew a call right at the end of the first half. The SEC even admitted it later. That would have put Auburn up 17-0 right before half. Instead, Georgia kicks a field goal and the turnover and right before halftime. So instead of 17-0, it's 10-3, and Georgia gets them in the second half. Anyway, that was sort of indicative of what had gone on the past few years with Auburn and Free. So now they bring Alex Golish up from South Florida. He has some SEC experience, of course, on Tennessee staff with Josh Heupel a few years ago. But a very progressive offense. And Byron Brown, his quarterback, comes up with him from Tampa. They got almost all the receivers coming up from USF as well. This was one of the top offenses in the country last year, over 40 points per game, ranked the top five nationally in scoring. Very, very dynamic. Golish really propped up that program. And the thought is if Auburn last year had that South Florida offense, they'd have probably won more than the five games that they did. Also, I mentioned Brown. That's one thing that Hugh Freeze didn't quite get right, I think, in his 3 years, was quarterback. Peyton Thorne had a little bit of some success there for Michigan State, but he just didn't deliver the big plays, and it really wasn't what Freeze was looking for. And neither was Jackson Arnold last year, who's, by the way, at UNLV now, coming over from Oklahoma. In fact, he was benched late in the year, and they had to go to Ashton Daniels, who's down at Florida State. But they think Brown will be able to do that. One thing I like most, though, about what Golish did, kept DJ Durkin as a defensive coordinator. Very well respected. Nothing wrong with Auburn's defense last year. In fact, he took over as the interim head coach after Freeze went out. Darn near beat Alabama with Durkin there. So the only schedule thing I worry about is the schedule here. That is a very tough October that Auburn's got. Four tough SEC road games, but I think they can get at least one of those. And if they beat Baylor in the opener in Atlanta, I think they're on their way. I think Auburn could be a surprise at the SEC. I like Golish enough, and I think they'll clear that 6.5 wins and maybe be a team to watch in the SEC.
Yep, completely agree. Bruce Marshall here with us. One team that is kind of in the same range in terms of win total, it's a little bit higher at 7.5, shaded to the over depending on where you look, Florida. And we have a new head coach here too. Summerall takes over at the Swamp here. What do you make of what John Summerall's got in front of him, and can he do this again? I mean, everything he has done for the most part has been nothing but successful.
Yeah, I mean, I love this hire, and I think Summerall's the real deal. What he did at Troy, and he picked up the piece at Tulane. Remember, I mean, Willie Fritz, after he left, I mean, a lot of the guys left Tulane too, so that was a little bit of a reload he had there. And last year they had to deal after Darian Mensah left, after being the breakthrough quarterback 2 years ago, and then they had to break in another quarterback last year at Tulane. So Summerall's the real deal. I think, though, I'm a little surprised they've got Florida ranked as high as they do here, just because I think they had a little bit further to go. And their quarterback, DJ Lagway, is now at Baylor. And Lagway did not live up to expectations as that thing really went off the rails for Billy Napier. I'm wondering about Aaron Filo, the quarterback coming in from Georgia Tech with his coordinator from Georgia Tech, Buster Faulkner. Now, there's some familiarity there, obviously. Though I wasn't that bowled away with Filo when I saw him at Georgia Tech. And, I mean, between him and Byron Brown, I would take Brown in a snap, comparing him to Auburn's quarterback. And I think there's a little bit more work that Summerall has got to do. It's interesting. That game three is at Auburn. And after they win their first two, they should, Florida Atlantic and Campbell, their first two. That'll be sort of the early litmus test in week three at Auburn. And that's at Jordan Hare. I think Auburn's going to get that one, and I am not as confident Florida can surpass its win total, especially since it's a game higher than Auburn's. Be very cautious about that with the Gators.
Pro Sports Better with us, Bruce Marshall, kind of sifted through the middle of the SEC at this point right now. It's really interesting, not a lot separating a ton of these teams. One more of these before we get to some of the big boys. Missouri, what do you make of what the Tigers have here? Because it looks like they could have one of the best running attacks in the country again. They bring in Ole Miss transfer at quarterback, Austin Simmons, who initially won the job, but then, of course, got Wally Pipped in that spot because of an injury. What upside do the Tigers have? 6.5 is their win total.
Yeah, I think they can probably get there just because Eli's had that program flying at a higher level. I think Ahmad Hardy's going to be ready. Remember, he had that, you know, that incident off the field there, and top rusher, and they think he's going to be okay for the season. And that's something there. And Simmons, you know, I was actually at the Kentucky game last year when Ole Miss won, and Simmons was a quarterback, but. I kind of think that Chambliss would have beaten him out anyway as that season progressed. He was very erratic throwing. I mean, a left-hander, he can move, but, boy, he missed when he misses the receiver, he really misses him. So I'm not sure how that's going to work for Eli. I think they can probably – it'll be tougher for Missouri. I don't think they're going to be capped out, you know, 7 or so is probably as far as they get. So I think I'd probably look over 6.5. Key game for them is going to be the second one, the old rivalry with Kansas. That was a big win early last season, and Mizzou came back for that win in the second game last year. And I think that's sort of the pivot point game early in the season. If they can't beat Kansas and they have to go to Lawrence for this one, that's key because they should beat Arkansas, Pine Bluff, and Troy in their other two non-conference games. But if they're not 3-0 coming out of non-conference, they might have some trouble getting above 500. 6-6 gets into a bowl. But I'm less confident about Mizzou getting there than I am about Auburn.
All right, let's talk about some of these big boys then. I'll ask it like this. Who is the best team by your measure in the SEC?
That's a good question because everybody's – the consensus seems to be – well, there is. I'm not sure there is a consensus. It's Georgia or Texas. I am not that sold on Texas, partly because – of that Georgia game last year when they just didn't deliver late in the season and got hammered. And the overhype for Arch, it's not quite as big this year as it was last year, but I think, you know, he still did not quite live up but to expectations. And I just think if push comes to shove, Georgia, which has beaten Texas 3 times the last 2 years, would probably do it again. So I might actually lean to Georgia a little bit. The one dark horse here, I'm not sure they even consider one of these top teams in the SEC a dark horse, but I would watch LSU very closely with Lane Kiffin. The fact he's brought in Sam Leavitt from Arizona State, if he's beyond the injury from last year. And remember, they were talking about him, potential first-round draft pick, before he got hurt, and he gangbusters 2 years ago for Kenny Dillingham at Tempe. Given Lane's work with quarterbacks in the past, I think he could make some magic with Leavitt. And Lane's on, you know, right now he's on a little bit of a honeymoon at Baton Rouge, hasn't gotten anybody upset down there yet. So I would really keep an eye on LSU as a team to watch in the SEC.
Bruce, we appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much for the time. Good to talk to you again, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, JVT.
Got it. Bruce Marshall again, Pro Sports Better at Bruce M Sports up on X. If you are listening to my voice or watching up on VSiN.com and you maybe have an affinity for the Chicago Cubs and you're looking for somebody to blame, that would be producer Justin, because it looked like Clay Holmes was perfect. And then I got a text about it, and then immediately he gave up a single. So, Justin, how do you feel about that? Pretty much all your fault. Good second start, though, for Holmes here in a Cubs uniform. He has been absolutely brilliant so far, but not getting the run support that he needs. The Cubs just got their first hit, I think, at the bottom of the fifth inning, too. So, low-scoring affair, scoreless between the two clubs right now, Cubs and Cardinals. We are at the top of the sixth with one out. Holmes threw out 65 pitches at this point right now. Updated in-game numbers for this low-scoring early game in Major League Baseball. DraftKings has the Cubs as about $1.80 favorite, plus 155 coming back on the St. Louis Cardinals. Total for the game, 3.5 shaded to the under at minus 147. Going to get a ground out here in a second, so two outs in the inning. We'll come back, get some best bets as we look ahead to college football. We'll wrap. We have to talk about the New York Jetsons preseason contest later today and more. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, wrapping it up here on Money Moves, the program at which I host every single day, Monday through Friday, 11 to 1. Sorry, I'm distracted. I have a lot going on here. It's a weekend, by the way. Hope you have a wonderful weekend planned, everybody else out there. A couple of things I want to get to before we head out and hand the mic over to Pauly Howard and his bottled Coca-Cola. John Jastrzemski, okay, thank you very much. John Jastrzemski is going to be with him here today. Ryan Kramer, Sports Betting Podcast, going to be with him. And then, of course, Matt Eumanns, Will Hill, over on VSiN Primetime. Speaking of Kramer, by the way, shout out to the Sports Gambling Podcast boys. Make their return tonight. Looking forward to that. It's going to be at 10 p.m. Eastern time. A couple of things. First off, bottom of the sixth inning, Libertor back out there for the St. Louis Cardinals. We are still scoreless between the Cubs and the Cardinals. Story was that Clay Holmes was perfect. He is not anymore. There's only one person that was ever perfect that we know of in the history of humans, and his name was Andrew Luck. So the lack of perfection continues. It endures here for the Chicago Cubs, but Clay Holmes putting together a pretty good performance in his second start as a Cub. Let's get to the preseason. Before we get to our plays of the day and the recap, can we get this Aaron Glenn clip ready? Because the only game we haven't hit for the preseason tonight is this New York Jets team that has, I think, an interesting spot in front of them in this preseason because they are one of a few teams. Now, you have these new regimes and whatnot, but Glenn has changed out both coordinator positions, one of which is, again, it all comes back to Andrew Luck, former head coach of Andrew Luck. Frank Reich is the offensive coordinator for the New York Jets now. Jets are up to a 6.5-point favorite. Total's 35.5. Bucks aren't really going to play anybody. Jets, well, they're going to play everybody. And Aaron Glenn told the media that he's looking for three things, and he'll tell you exactly what they are.
Here's three things that I really want to see, and it's something that we talk about quite a bit, is I want to see the fundamentals of the game show up. And when I say that, man, I want to see blocking, tackling, catching, ball security, punching the ball. Like, I want to see those things. And then I want to see the techniques behind that also. Well, I want to make sure that we operate in that aspect when it comes to the game. And then I want to see us execute. I want to see those three things, and I want to see the discipline of our team. All right, so actually four things I want to see in this game.
Not just three, but four. You got to add on the fourth one at the end. Look, I do think Glenn probably, as we're looking at this and trying to guess what the mentality of some of these teams are going into these, and just because you can guess what the mentality is, you can nail it right away, and they still won't be able to execute it because there's other forces at play. But it would seem that the Jets are going to take this relatively serious, maybe try to win this game. Who knows about the game plan? Set themselves up for success. Again, when you have two new coordinators, you want some sort of an install, the communication, I should say, between the pieces that need to have the communication and whatnot. So I think you get a pretty good effort here from the Jets. The question now becomes, what do you do? I mean, it does seem eerily similar to what we saw last night between the Lions and the Bengals. I mean, the Bengals closed as about 6.5-point favorites. Didn't come close to covering that number. The Dogs, of course, have the day yesterday. And then you have this one where you're up to 6.5. Again, I am not in the neighborhood of just trying to, or the mindset, I should say, if I'm going to speak proper English. I don't think that we should probably get these far out on some of these preseason lines. You know, it's the reason why Detroit was one of the plays yesterday. As we get into the recap for Thursday, a split, you pay the juice. Lions plus 7, stay inside of the number against the Cincinnati Bengals. And the Raiders in the first half, laying 0.5. They do not get there against the Arizona Cardinals last night. So 1-1 and paying the juice there between the two preseason plays. I'm not going to play the game of, like, I deserve better. The Raiders didn't really even come close to covering that number in the first half against the Arizona Cardinals. And just an observation, although that game went under the total, the Hall of Fame game did go over, and that participant was the Arizona Cardinals. And by the way, too, the other side note, as I continue to get distracted, Cardinals, the trend of team that played in the Hall of Fame game having a slight advantage, that kind of continues to strengthen itself as they go out there and look pretty solid in that matchup against the Raiders last night. But Cardinals also, in a couple of high-scoring games, again, the game did go under the closing number but went over the opening number. So maybe the Cardinals being an over team here in the preseason, maybe the Raiders are as well. We'll see if that actually is going to be the case. But just a note worth pointing out. For today, nothing in the preseason tonight, I think, although, you know, by the time we get to later tonight, maybe you'll find I'll find myself with a ticket on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers if I really feel like I want to do this. But because we're in the theme and we're in the season, if you will, did want to add a couple of week zero plays because I do think that there's probably going to be some movement here on both of these. So we'll take a stab now. against the betting market here in week zero. First of which is, look, I've had a theory about this. I wrote about this in the betting guide when it came to the Mountain West. My thought that in college football, one of the teams that might be a little overvalued as we head into the season is the North Dakota State Bison. And so I will take my shot against North Dakota State. They are 7-point favorites in week zero against Jacksonville State. And I'll take that 7 with Jacksonville State here against North Dakota State as one of the plays we'll add here today. Again, this is just on the theory that I think the market's just too high in almost every single regard for North Dakota State. To reiterate, the Bison lost a lot of talent, especially along the offensive line, in the transfer portal. They are rebuilding internally, promoting internally. It's generally what they do. I got to talk to Paul Hasek at Mountain West Media Days, and they talked about their philosophy here. I just don't know if that's really going to work out for you as you make this transition. But while the market continues to have high expectations for this team here. So if I'm getting the full 7, there were 7.5s available. Those are gone. But I'll take the full touchdown here with Jacksonville State on the thought that the Gamecocks can stay inside of that number against a North Dakota State team that lost quite a bit, didn't even bring in a ton, really brought in mostly freshmen. And in today's day and age, it's an interesting way to handle things. But I think the Bison come into this season a little overvalued. So I'll head in that direction. The other play, we'll go Memphis plus 6.5 against UNLV. Now, this is the risk, but I don't think the market is going to allow the Rebels to get to that full 7. And if it will, it will be fleeting. But I have found myself definitely with a differing opinion on UNLV here. And we talked about this last year. They have a decent read on the Rebels, so we'll see if this actually works out. But I do think at 6.5, I don't think we're going to get to that full 7. 6.5 available at BetMGM and a couple of other spots. We're taking a stab here with Memphis. This is a CFP potential eliminator between these two teams. Both teams could be up for a college football playoff spot as the group of six representative. You know, Memphis, we'll see if they can pull this thing out. But I do think UNLV, similar to North Dakota State, maybe being a little overvalued. I don't think there's a real battle at quarterback. Jackson Arnold is going to be the starting quarterback for UNLV. But do think that this is a little bit more of a flawed team than the market expects. A lot of preseason expectations for UNLV, but I think from a power rating standpoint, again, just comes out a little bit higher than I expected. I thought this was going to be more like 4, and we're at 6. So take a stab with Memphis. Again, 6.5 are plenty available here in week zero. And there is one other game, and our buddy Von Dalzell, who was with us earlier, did talk about this. And so I will wait to see if this gets any higher up. I don't think I'm going to lose out on the key number here. But let's go to Ireland, and I just want to point this out. TCU is a 7.5-point favorite over North Carolina. I've not played this yet because I think I'll be able to grab 7.5 with North Carolina whenever I want. But I'll be on North Carolina here out in this Ireland game to start us off on Saturday morning in a couple of weeks. I just think, first things first, these Irish games get a little weird, right? It depends on how you handle it. Like, for example, Nebraska in those Scott Frost days went out there. A lot of rumors about them really enjoying themselves, not taking it seriously, and didn't really go particularly well. But on a neutral site, in a weird setting like this, going across the pond, with a North Carolina team that defensively last year was really, really solid, at 7.5, I just feel like I want to take a stab here. And here's the other thing, too. On the other side, TCU, the Harvard transfer quarterback, you have your own questions on your offense. Again, not played it yet. I'll just sit back and wait. But I feel pretty confident I'll be able to get 7.5 whenever I want. My question is just, can I get 8? Can I get 8.5? I don't think so. But we'll just see if we can get the best of the number. But North Carolina will be a play for me in week zero as well, just waiting on when that's going to be. So 3 week zero plays. We'll call it 2.5 because North Carolina not official yet. But for sure, Jacksonville State plus 7 against North Dakota State. And that matchup in UNLV and Memphis, 6.5 is available in a lot of other places. And I'll say this too. It's going to be a dog day on that Saturday to open college football on August 29th. Hawaii and Stanford. As I asked Tim about this the other day, seems to be one-way traffic, and I know the injury to Pofele Ashlock isn't great. It's a road trip. It's a revenge spot. All of these things. Stanford, though, up to 5.5. I do wonder where this number gets to as well. At some point, I feel like I'm going to get dragged into this because if we get to that like 6.5 range with Stanford by the time we get to week zero and kickoff time, I'll be in on the Rainbow Warriors. I can't shake my love for this team, and I do believe in Mike Alejado, and I understand everything that is part of this situation for the Rainbow Warriors. Understand how hard it is to travel when you're talking about coming off the island and whatnot, but it's not an abundance of travel heading up to the West Coast. I just think that maybe everything that we've talked about with the situation, the injuries, I think we've had that pretty factored into this number, but it continues to climb. So we'll see if this gets any higher. But at some point, I'll find that gravitational pull to be a little too strong when it comes to Hawaii catching that number against Stanford. I'll probably regret it, But I do think that that's going to be way too tempting to pass up if it continues to head in the direction that it does. Man, I am stoked. We got week zero college football right around the corner. It's 2 weeks away. Very much looking forward to that, by the way. As you will be, by the way, for what's coming up next here on the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Follow the Money, Paul Howard, John Jastrzemski. Today, Ryan Kramer, host of the Sports Betting Podcast, going to be with him. Matt Eumanns, Will Hill is going to be on VSiN Primetime a little bit later today. And the Sports Gambling Podcast, speaking of Kramer, they make their triumphant return tonight for football season. That starts at 10 p.m. with Sean and Ryan. So make sure you do not miss out on that. Their return is also why, too, I think, why the summer of Swede, it's over. But Dustin called me during the show. Like, brother, I'm on the air. But apparently he's on the East Coast. With that, VSiN.com/subscribe. Check out everything we have to offer, introductory offer, and more. We'll see you on Monday on Money Moves. Until then, have a good weekend.